Okay, so just a little bit of an introduction to me. I'm Susie Bills. I am the vice president of LDS PPA. I'm also the director over education right now. So that's, I am the one who arranges the roundtable conference calls every month. So if you have any suggestions for topics you would like to hear about during a roundtable, feel free to let me know. You can just email the LDSPPAinfo@gmail.com email address, and we'll get that information. So we're always looking for new ideas for roundtables. So a little bit about my background. Why am I talking about freelancing? Well, I have freelanced either full-time or part-time since 2006. So I've been doing that for 11 years. I've learned a lot from experience, from checking out different resources available from my own trial and error. And so I've developed a lot of experience. I also have an MBA, which helped me with the business side of things. I teach a freelance editing class at BYU. And that's my, I'm a professor at BYU. So that's a little bit of my background. I love, because I've learned so much about freelancing, and most editors, whether they're working full-time or not, at some point in their careers, they probably will do some freelancing. And so I just love sharing my experiences, my learning with other people. So to make it a little bit easier for them, they can avoid some of the little missteps that I made, and they can be successful, whether it's full-time or part-time. So that's just a little bit about my background and just my interest in sharing about freelancing. And so I have some main points that I want to share, but I also really want to make it valuable to you by answering your questions. What things do you want to know about freelancing? What things, what issues, challenges have you experienced in freelancing? And what are you wanting to learn? So I'm going to open it up to you to ask some questions, and we can start off that way. There will be, you know, I'll tie in some of the main points that I want to make sure that I cover during this discussion, but I just want to open it up, start out by opening it up to you. What questions or challenges have you experienced with freelancing, and what would you like to know?
I've never freelanced, and I want to. And so I'm just like a complete newbie here. I need to know, you know, what I can do to get my name out there, what I can do to get some contacts, what I can do to, yeah, to get some work. So.
Yeah, and definitely that's the way to start. So it sounds like you have already, you're in the field of editing already. Yes. And so I would start just with your network that you already have, so your contacts already. You know, start there and let them know that you are interested in freelancing. It's kind of funny. I think a lot of people, a lot of editors who want to do freelancing, they assume that people will just know that you're open and interested in doing freelancing. But I've many times had people say, is it okay if I share your contact information with somebody who wants some editing? Or sometimes they've even kind of asked me, I hope you don't be mad at me, but I shared your information with somebody. And you know, they don't even realize that you would appreciate that. So that's the first thing I would start, is just let everybody you know, your professional contacts, as well as friends, family, that yes, you are available to do freelancing. So let them know, hey, if you hear of anybody who needs some editing or writing, design, whatever skills you're offering, that you are available and that they should contact you. With that, I would make sure then your email signature under that have something letting people know that you're an editor, that they can contact you for editing. I would recommend having ideally having a website, which is kind of your portfolio. And so you would have a link to your portfolio in your email signature. And so people can go there and check you out. If you don't have that already, then definitely have a LinkedIn profile that's built out and include your LinkedIn profile link in your email signature. So people have somewhere to go to check out your skills. And especially now where we're doing so much work online and you're working with somebody in a totally different state or maybe even different country and you're not meeting that person face to face, they get a little worried. You know, is this person real? Are they just a scammer? Are they going to just try to get my money and run? And so having a LinkedIn profile and having a website and things like that just give them more confidence that, okay, this is a real legitimate person. I can trust them. I am okay working with them. And so those are important. You can use different types of social media to advertise your business, to get a following. All of them can be effective. So you can try all of them. I would really focus on using LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I have, with very little work on my part, I've gotten a lot of business from LinkedIn. So let me give you some examples. I'm a BYU alumni and I joined the BYU alumni group on LinkedIn, and there is a discussion post of just people saying, okay, say what you do, just introduce yourself. And so I said, I'm Susie Bills. I've been editing for however many years and editing and writing. And if you or your business needs any editing or writing assistance, please contact me. I'd love to work with you. It was that simple. It took me a minute to write. And from that, I had somebody contact me and say, hey, I think maybe you would be a good fit for my business. And I ended up making thousands of dollars working for this guy. Wow. On a freelance basis. And it took me a minute. And he sought me out. And yeah. So I've had other times where people just found me on LinkedIn and they said, hey, I'm interested in you doing work for me. And even just recently, I saw a post on LinkedIn of somebody saying, I need an editor. And so I said, well, I'm an editor. I'd love to talk with you. And so we talked this last week, and I'm going to edit her dissertation for her.
Oh, wow.
And so... yeah, I would really focus on LinkedIn of all the social media, because that's the site, it's the business platform for social media, and that's where you're going to find a lot of the jobs. So really focus your efforts there. Make sure that you have your LinkedIn profile is it's completed and it's professional looking. So have a very nice professional looking photograph of you. Make sure you're smiling in it. Plain background. So you just look approachable. Make sure you have the keywords. You're an editor, or maybe you're a writer. Have those keywords in your little personal description of what you are. And so when people are searching, if they're searching for a designer, you have that in your little description, and so you come up in the search results. Okay. It's also really beneficial to describe in your summary, what do you do? There you can provide more details, and you can describe the different things you do, but also present it in a way of what's in it for the clients. How are you going to help them? It's not about you. It's always about the client. So what are you going to do for them? For example, going back to the example of dissertations, so I've edited a lot of dissertations, and when I'm talking with doctoral writers, I'm saying, My goal is to help you get your dissertation approved so you can get your doctoral degree, because that's their ultimate goal. They don't care as much about whether their dissertation is free of dingley modifiers, if it has the right punctuation. They just care that their dissertation gets approved by the university committee so they can finish their doctoral degree. So speak in terms of what your clients want. It takes a little bit more thinking, but think about their end goal and then describe that. And then they'll say, oh, wow, he understands me. She gets me. I want to talk to this person. This person sounds like the right one for me. Okay. So all of those things in your LinkedIn profile are really beneficial. Now, using LinkedIn, how do you go about and get some? Oh, hold on just a second. Sorry for this. Somebody is trying to get on to the call. Oh, okay. No, actually, it looks okay. Okay. So how do you go about searching for jobs on LinkedIn? And since this is only an audio conference, I can't show you the visuals, but if you go on LinkedIn on their website, then you can search. And when the little search bar pulls up at the top, then type in seeking editor, seeking writer, seeking whatever. And then you type that in, and then you'll get results. And next, what you can do is it'll give you some options. Okay, are you do you want to see people, jobs, posts, companies, groups, schools? If you choose the jobs tab, then that's going to show you mainly full-time jobs. So that's not really going to show you the freelance ones. Okay. So it often is better to go to posts, and that will show you posts of what people have posted. And so it will show you full-time jobs, but it will also show you people who are seeking freelance whatevers. And another thing that I just recently learned is that if you do this search on your phone through the LinkedIn app, you have more options for, you can filter the options. So you can even, you can search for, okay, posts that were just made in the last 24 hours, posts that were made in the last week. And so you can filter them that way. So you can see the ones that were made most recently, for example, and you can respond very quickly to those. So I would say, focus your efforts on LinkedIn, how to really optimize your profile and be on there regularly. Just make it a daily habit of just spend 5 minutes looking through the posts of jobs that are available to see if anything fits you. So really use LinkedIn to the max. Okay. Besides that, so it really is a lot of word of mouth. And so it goes back to networking with people, letting them know that you are available and interested in freelancing. And when you do edit for somebody, when you finish the project and they said, oh, thank you so much, you've done such a great job, Pamela. And then say, well, thank you, I love working with authors, and if you have anybody else that you know of who could benefit from my editing, please share my contact information with them. Okay. So, you know, that's the perfect time to do it, because they have all these wonderful, happy feelings towards you because you just helped them achieve their goal with what they wrote. And they think, oh, yeah, I want to share this good news, this great person, this great resource with other people I know. And so they will. And I have had lots of clients come to me that way of, so-and-so referred me to you, and so here I am. Can you help me? And so just that snowball effect. You provide good service, and people are very happy to share information about you with others. So don't be afraid to make that ask. It's not, I think sometimes I know I get a little shy or just, I don't want to push myself on people, but you're really not pushing yourself on people. So if you feel that way, as I know that I do, don't remind yourself, no, it's okay that I'm asking this. I'm not being pushy. I'm just saying, hey, you know, I'm available. And so I just want to let people know. And I do include it on my invoice. At the bottom of the invoice, I say, thank you for letting me work with you. Please feel free to refer me to other people that may be of benefit. So just those little things, little opportunities, you spend enough of those little seeds out and you do bring in a lot of business. So those are the places I would start. I have a freelancing handout with more suggestions related to that and some resources on building out your LinkedIn profile that I'm happy to, I think we'll put that up on our website. Okay. And so everybody can access that. So do you have, you or anybody else on the line have any follow-up questions related to that?
Invoicing, you mentioned invoicing. So, you do this all via email, right, or text or whatever. And do you have like a specific form that you use for an invoice, or do you just kind of, you know, make one up? And
yeah, great question. So I have a Word template that I have created for my invoice. So I have that template and I just enter in the correct information for the specific project and I send it out. So it takes me 2-3 minutes to update that template for a specific project. And then I turn it into a PDF and I send it out. There are lots of online programs, invoicing programs that you can use for it. I tried one or two and I found that it was easy for me to use my own invoice, and then it was completely customizable and how I did the design and my logo, and I got it to look exactly how I wanted it to. And so I just use a Word template, or you could use an InDesign template, but there are online ones as well. So that's another great idea for freelancers, is just to type in best apps or best online programs for freelancers. A lot of results will come up and there will be a lot of articles on, here are the 10 top apps to use for freelancing. Here are the best 7. Here are the best 25. And I would read through a couple of those because there really are a lot of different programs. And it's good just to be kind of aware. And you might say, oh, this one would be helpful, but I don't think I would really use this one. And so, you know, you just get to see what's out there and find out what works best for you. That's really what I suggest. For example, I tried a phone app for to-do lists. I tried probably 10 different apps and I really didn't like any of them. So I am very old school and I write it down on a piece of paper. I have my weekly calendar out. It's a physical thing that I look at and that works best for me. But you know, just try out the different resources and see what works best for you. So the same thing with invoices. Try out a couple programs, see if you like them, or, you know, go with a Word file and see what you prefer. Related to invoices, I also send out a contract, and that, if there's 10 commandments to being a freelancer, sending out a contract is probably number one. That's like what all, everything hangs on, the contract. And it's for many reasons. One, it makes sure that you and your client are both clear on the terms. So you're clear on what the price is, what the work includes. You're clear on due dates. You are clear on how payment will be made, whether there will be a late fee for a late payment. It specifies everything. And it just makes people feel like, oh, this is real. I guess I should act like this is a real contract. And it also makes them think, oh, I guess I should pay this, where there have been some times when I didn't use contracts. And those tended to be the times when people tried not to pay me. And I will get into that in a little bit. You know, that was very much the exception to the rule. I would say 99% of the people I have worked with have been very diligent in paying me. There are a few who will try to get out of it. And I think that in all those cases, they didn't have that intention at the beginning, but then, you know, financial difficulties come up and they didn't really have the money anymore. And so they try to get out of paying you. But when you have a contract, then they feel like, okay, I guess I'm obligated, so I guess I better pay this, even though money is tight right now. So have a contract.
Is it a legally binding contract? How can you make it a legally binding contract, I guess?
Yeah, the one I have, so I based it off of an editing contract created by an editing association. And it is legally binding. We can also, I can share that with members on the call. And so probably, I think after this weekend, I will just send it out to the people who are on the call, because I'd kind of prefer that not to be right on our website. Sure. But yeah, so it definitely is legally binding, and they sign it, you sign it, and if it came to dire straits, then you could use it in a court to say, yes, this is what we agreed on. Mm-hmm. But you know what, like I said, most of the time, 99% of the time, if you have the contract, you don't have problems. Okay. And so it just kind of, it's like the idea of, why do you lock your door at night? Well, you don't assume that there's going to be a burglar coming around your house every night, trying to open the doors. But you do it as a safety precaution, because sometime that might happen. And so it's the same thing with the contract. You just do it in the unlikely case that that's the night that the burglar is going to come.
Right.
And then you're safe. So do you have your contract? And then, so I send out the contract by email. They can electronically sign it, and then they return it to me. And then when I finish the project, I send them the edited work, or if I'm writing something, whatever, the document. And with that, I also send them an invoice in PDF format with the amount due, where they need to pay, send payment, that kind of thing. With my projects, I typically require 50% upfront, and that has not been a problem. And I do that because that also helps guard against non-payment and just prompt payment. People, they're not joking around if they're willing to pay you 50% up front. they are saying, yes, I want to go forward. And so, and if they do decide to skip the second half of the payment, at least you got 50% up front. And so if it takes a while to get the other 50%, and if you have some issues, at least you have at least 50%. So that also takes care of some issues. So 50% up is pretty standard, and so that's in my contract. So they send me the 50% first, and that they need to send me before I return the completed work. Okay. And so those are some just kind of strategies to keep things safe.
Okay. And so in terms of electronic signing, are there programs out there for that, for being able to?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's DocSign, which is the one I'm most familiar with. I know there are some other ones. I can't think of the names right off the bat. So, yeah, but it's, again, you could just Google the search term and you'd find various options.
Okay.
Yeah, and with payment options, I try to work with my clients on how they want to pay. So I offer them various options. They can pay sending a check in the mail. They can do a bank-to-bank transfer. I accept Venmo, which is like a online system, and you can have an app on your phone, and that's very easy to use. I do allow PayPal if they really want to pay via PayPal. The reason why I don't prefer PayPal is that on the my side, there's almost a 4% transaction fee.
Right.
So if I can avoid that, I prefer to. So I do, if they really want to do it that way, then I'll work with them. I also accept Western Union. There are some other payment methods, kind of like Venmo online, that you can use. So
I'm sorry, what
I...
Venmo?
Yeah, V-E-N-M-O.
Oh,
so
okay.
Venmo.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, I love bank-to-bank transfer because then the money just shows up in my banking account, and that's the easiest. But I would say Venmo is the second easiest for me. It's once you're signed up, somebody just... they can enter your email address and they see your profile, and then they just write on their phone app or on the website, they just type in the amount of money that they want to put transfer to your account, and it's done. It's very simple. So I love that system. There are other systems like that online. Yes.
For Venmo, you can also request, instead of them having to see, you can request from their account. And then there's also an app called Cash App, and you can also do iPhone to iPhone through Apple Pay now.
Oh, nice. Yes,
so
and that's a good point about the, yeah, thank you for bringing up the Venmo. You can request money too. And so, so you could do it, you know, just kind of the same idea how PayPal, you can send out an invoice through PayPal. You can do that same kind of thing on Venmo. And so if your client is willing to pay on Venmo, then you can just send out that request to them on Venmo. So, and the Cash App one is great too. So there really are lots of different options. So I would say try to make it pretty easy for your clients. I have had some clients ask if they can pay by via credit card on my website. And I have not set up credit card payment on my website. You can do that through Square and through some other systems. The reason why I don't do that, though, is because there's about a 4% transaction fee. And so, again, I'm just trying to avoid the transaction fee on my side. So, you know, and I've explained to them, if I think it only really was one client who really kind of persisted on wanting to pay via credit card. I said, well, you can pay via credit card on Venmo, on Western Union, on PayPal if they really wanted to do it that way. So they can pay through credit card through using other systems, just not directly on my site. So, you know, if that ever comes up for you, you can explain you can use credit card and these other options that you accept payment through. And I'm going to just get a drink of water real quick. So if you have any other questions, feel free to ask them. Okay. Let me share just a little bit about clients who won't pay, because that's, it is a reality. It's something you need to be aware of. Like I said, when you do a contract and when you get money up front, you really have set yourself up for avoiding payment issues. I think I've only had one time where somebody, after we had done a contract that set all that up, had gotten some money up front, but not quite 50%. And then she decided she didn't want to pay me the rest. So most of the time with the contract, with the money up front, you have set yourself up to be safe. When, say, you didn't, or you did those precautions and you still have somebody who doesn't want to pay, it might come something like this. They'll come back to you and say, oh, you didn't do what you were supposed to do. And you can then say, well, here's what the contract says. And I did this, 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 and this, as the contract said. So yes, I did complete my agreed upon duties. So you can always go back to the contract. You, and they might still disagree. They might get a little nasty. And, you know, make sure that you're always staying very professional. You don't want to get into the shouting match with them. Just keep things very professional. And just say, well, this is what we agreed on. This is our documentation. And I also recommend, make sure that you're saving all of your emails, all email exchanges with your clients. Just file them away in a folder with for that client. And so if anything ever comes up, you have documentation. In the first time I ever had somebody who didn't want to pay me, she first told me that she had mailed payments and that we thought that they got lost in the mail. And then she said, oh, well, I'm sending out another check. And that one never came up either. And then she kind of stopped responding to my emails. And I was persistent. And eventually she emailed back and said, oh, well, I'm not satisfied with your work. You didn't do what I wanted you to. And I said, well, in these past emails, you said you were very happy with my work. And you said you had mailed payment. And so I actually, it got to the point where I got a lawyer and the lawyer sent a demand letter. And so that's something you would want to do, is send a demand letter saying, okay, here's what you owe based on this contract that was established. And here are the deadlines and everything. So you lay it all out and you send it to them. And that's kind of the first step in the legal process. You send a demand letter. Mm-hmm. And because I had all the documentation in my emails, when we sent this demand letter, then I not too long later got a letter from her lawyer saying, okay, we're going to pay you, except they requested that, like, they pay me $50 less than she owed. And, you know, when she owed me about $1,000, I was happy to collect all but about 50 of it. And so, you know, you can be willing to make some concessions on your side so that you can get the majority of the money. but it saved me that I had all the documentation. So make sure you're filing everything away. With email now, there's so much space that there really is no reason not to just save everything. And it's the same thing with files. I save all of my working files that I worked with on with clients. So even, gosh, documents from 2011, and I won't probably ever work with this author anymore. I just zip those folder files up in their folder, and I just keep it there. And why? Because More than once, I've had authors come back years later and say, hey, you probably don't remember me, but we worked together so many years ago, and I'm wondering if you can help me again. And so just being able to go back to my emails from this person before and the documents that I have from them before has been very helpful. And sometimes they'll ask, do you have that file? And I say, yeah, I do. And so, you know, it's just a way to make things easy for you, but also your authors really appreciate it, and they appreciate that you remember them. And you might not really remember them, but you can go back to your documentation and then you remember them. And so just save everything. Make sure you're backing up all of your materials. So you have them on your computer or hard drive. I would recommend also putting them on a USB drive and also having them saved in cloud storage. So whether it's Dropbox or Microsoft Cloud or iCloud, so many different options, make sure you have them saved somewhere in the cloud, just because it's easy if your computer goes haywire and you can't use that anymore. You still have your documents on the cloud. You can access them from any computer, anywhere, and it just kind of saves you. I know people who use backup computer systems like Carbonite, and I can't think of other names of them right now. I personally don't use one of those because I feel that if I have them on my computer, on a USB drive, and on cloud storage, then I'm safe. I don't need another file backup system as well. But I know other people who really do prefer to have that. And so it's something for you to consider. Decide what really works best for you. You want to think of it in terms of, okay, this is my business, whether it's a full-time or a part-time business. So this is my livelihood. What just precautions do I need to take? What would I do if my laptop exploded? And as Adam knows, I have very bad luck with computers. I go through a laptop about once a year, and that's not exaggerating. So I am very careful. I know that at any minute my laptop could indeed explode. But I have a backup laptop that I can use. It's actually kind of funny. This week at my house, I've had my two laptops and my work laptop out in my kitchen. So I have three laptops just out of my kitchen this week because I've been doing different things on different laptops. If something happened to my main laptop, I could use my backup laptop. And the files, I use Dropbox, and so I can access the Dropbox files on my main laptop and on my backup laptop. And so I'm safe. If something happens, I'm all right. And it's not going to hurt my business too much. And so just think about those things. Kind of like we have house insurance, we need to take steps to make sure that we are protecting our company materials in whatever way is most important or most effective.
Sounds good.
Something else I would say on being a freelancer is find ways to be more productive and more efficient. And so those are kind of two different things. I'm going to start with the more efficient. And so one example would be creating that invoice template. So I'm not every time creating a new invoice from scratch. I'm just replacing a couple of fields. And so that saves me time. I have some boilerplate emails. So when people email me with a request for information about my services, I just paste in this text that describes what kind of services I offer for the kind of assistance they're looking for. And so that's one way to just save time, be more efficient, because you're not recreating things every time it comes up. Also, this is specific for mainly editors, but it can apply to authors and designers, is to use shortcut keys. Whether you're using Microsoft Word or InDesign or whatever program, you have access to a lot of shortcut keys. So probably a lot of people have heard about Control, if you're on a PC, Control C is copy, Control V is paste. So using those, but there are so many more you can use, and you can assign your own shortcuts. So for example, I've assigned a lot, but I have one, I use Control Shift N to go to the next track change in a document. And I use Control Alt M to add a comment to something in the Word document. So you can create your own shortcuts. And I will actually be leading a roundtable discussion in a few months on how to do those shortcuts and also how to use macros in Microsoft Word, because that saves a lot of time too. And it also makes your editing more accurate. You can catch a lot of things that you wouldn't catch otherwise, or that would take you longer to catch when you use macros. So macros are just kind of a power source if you're using Microsoft Word a lot, like editors are doing. And so I would start, you know, make it a goal that maybe once a week or once a month that you are learning a new shortcut key or a new macro to add to your processes, and that will make you faster. And so, you know, you're able to complete documents more quickly, and so you have not only more time to do more work and bring in more income, but you have more time to do other things. You know, if I spend 7 hours instead of 8 hours editing a document, then if I want to, I can spend that 8th hour doing something that I really enjoy that's not related to work. And they're also using some of those apps that I mentioned, find things that automate your work. And so that's a really kind of a best practice for freelancers, is it's how can they make their work faster and so they're accomplishing more. The other side of it is how to be more productive. Well, you use those tools, but also maybe some people, they have a hard time staying focused, especially if they're at their house and they have distractions. You know, they're not in an office where they kind of know that they have to be on their best behavior and focused on their work. And so how do you handle that? There are lots of apps that can help with that. There are some apps that you turn them on and they won't let you access any of your social media accounts for a specified number of minutes or hours, however long you specify. And so that can be very beneficial for some people who otherwise would just get kind of wrapped up in Facebook reading through their feed when they need to be editing something. So there's that. There's also another really effective technique. It's called the Pomodoro method. And there are different variations of it. But the basic idea is that you work really focused for about 45 minutes. And then you take a 15-minute break. So it's intense spurts of really focused work and then a break. And they this method came about because they found that people do better when they can be really intensely focused on something for a while, but then their brain needs a break. If you just try to keep working without a break for hours on end, you're not going to, you might feel that you're being productive, but you're losing productivity and you're not, maybe you're not catching all the errors in the document that you're editing. And so it does help to take those short breaks. And so use that method. And that's kind of a motivation too, saying, okay, I have 45 minutes. I need to get through this number of pages and then I can take a 10, 15 minute break. I'm going to go on to Facebook or I'm going to email a friend or whatever it be, whatever is your good idea of a break. If you can't handle starting with 45 minutes, because for some people, even that is an excruciatingly long time without taking a break, then you start smaller. Start wherever you currently are and you build up. So it's the same idea as if you are strength training. And yeah, the first time you strength train, you're not going to be able to curl 100 pounds. You need to start with 5 or 10. And then a week later, maybe you increase it a couple pounds. And then a week later, you increase it a little bit more. And it's the same thing with focus. You start with wherever you're at. Maybe you can focus for 15 minutes. And then next week, you focus for 20 minutes before taking a break. So just build up to it, and eventually, you will be able to focus for longer and be more effective, and you'll be amazed by how much you're getting done, and you can get things more done in the same amount of time as you previously did. And so that's another good technique to try out. So we have just a few minutes left. So maybe just a couple questions. Does anybody have a final question that they want to ask?
What do you charge per hour? And do you have I spoke to someone who had kind of different levels of, you know, light editing, heavy mm-hmm. editing, that sort of thing.
Yeah, good question. So when I work with clients, I don't charge an hourly. Well, I have an effective hourly that I want to make, but I do not ever talk to them in those terms. I always talk to them in terms of project fees. So for example, let's just say I want to make $50 an hour and it was going to be, I estimated it was going to be $10 or 10 hours of work. So then I would do 50 times 10. So that's 500. And so I would just tell them that's the project fee. So you pick the hourly rate you want to make, and then you estimate the number of hours and you tell them that, because that just gets, avoids a lot of problems. Because if you tell them, well, this is my hourly fee, then there are a lot of judgments that go on. They might say, oh, well, that's more than I make an hour. Why should I pay you that much for an hour of work? Or they might, you know, there's just so many things. But when you put it into a project fee, the question is that within my budget? That's all that they need to ask. And if that is within their budget, then they say, okay, let's go forward. And if it's not, then they go with somebody else or they try to negotiate with you. But also, when you use a project fee instead of an hourly, there's also not that problem of saying, well, I'm going to increase my hourly fee. And then they might balk at that. But if you're just using a project fee, then you can increase the amount. And it's just reflected in the project fee that you tell them. And it's not an issue of, well, why is she increasing her fee? So again, it avoids all those issues. So I really recommend doing a project fee. If you do want to do an hourly fee, For me, I just keep it pretty simple. I just, you know, the hourly that I want to make that I use to determine my project fee, I just do it kind of across the board, whatever, whether it's a light edit or a heavy edit, or if I'm ghostwriting something, I just use the same amount, unless I think it's going to be very, very difficult and cause me issues, then I might do a higher. But if you're looking for suggestions of rates, you can look on it's, and this is in the freelance handout that I've created that I'll share with you, but it's the EFA, so www.the-efa.org, and they have a page that is rates for different editing and writing work. And so they have a ranges there. And so it might say, okay, for writing, standard is, X number of dollars an hour to X number of dollars an hour, and you'll likely be able to do so many pages per hour. And so it gives you kind of a, just a range, a good place to get some ideas of what might be appropriate. And also keep in mind, it depends on the industry you're working in. If you're working in high tech, you definitely can command higher rates per hour than if you are editing fiction. Right. And so that also kind of affects what I would do for a project fee. I know that for high tech, if I did for high tech the same amount that I charge for fiction, the high tech company might look at me and say, do you really know what you're doing? Like, are you really a high tech editor? Because you're charging peanuts. So maybe she's not legit. And so it actually makes them suspect that you are not a good choice because you're not charging the standard rates for the industry. So that's something else to think about. Okay. You know, who is my client? What kind of rates are they generally expecting? And also, and that's honestly one reason why I really don't do much editing in some industries is because their pay is pretty low. And I just kind of feel like, well, if it's my time that I'm spending, I'd rather make more than that per hour. And so, you know, maybe that's a snobby attitude, but that's off, you know, it's not always the case. I will do some other industries that I'm not making as much, but generally I kind of feel like, you know, this is my time, so this is my rate, and if they can't afford it, then I'm just going to do work that can afford it. So those are just lots of different things. Starting out freelancing, you often might need to start out a little lower, but then you can always experiment with increasing your rate. And especially in that, it's a lot easier if you're doing a project fee and you just, okay, this time I'm going to go increase it by $5 more an hour or $50 overall on the project and see if they are willing to meet that amount. And so it's just kind of a trial and error thing. And you keep trying and you get a better idea of what the market will bear within that industry. Okay. You're welcome. Well, we need to wrap up. So, thank you again for everybody who joined us today. And like I said, we are recording, so we will get the recording up on the website, hopefully mid next week. And also the freelancing handout, I will make that available. And anybody who wants the contract, sample contract that I have, you can either email me ldsppainfo@gmail.com for that. I know a couple of you on the line have already said that you want it. So you can get that as well. Okay. So thank you everybody for joining on, and I hope you have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye. Bye.